Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
Second episode of the week here on Hardwood Handicappers. It's a busy week. Postseason's pretty much underway. Play-in games are all but done. We only got two left as we record this on Thursday. Washington Wizards later today taking on the Indiana Pacers. And then, of course, we have the Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Golden State Warriors on Friday. Rematch between those two. That's going to be freaking awesome. I cannot wait for that. So I am going to have, coming up tomorrow, another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. This is going to be the full-on playoff preview, series previews of the series that are already set. We take a look at the at least Eastern Conference series between the 1 and the 8 that will be set. And we, of course, will give you two looks at a 1-8 matchup between Utah and Memphis and then Utah at Golden State so you can see for yourself and we can get some analysis on that, even though the matchup won't be out already. But you're going to have three episodes of Hardwood Handicappers this week. So, hey, look, it's a busy week. Very excited about everything. So we want to make sure that we churn out a lot of content here at VSiN. So let's dive in. First off, really quickly, for those who are listening to this, one of the things that I am really excited about this postseason in terms of a series, right? Because at first, I was like, you know what? Knicks, Hawks, I'm in. This is the one series that I need to watch. I want to watch this. If you told me, John, you can only watch one of these bad boys, which one's it going to be? Before all of what we're going to get into today, I was like, you know what? Give me Knicks and Hawks. But I have changed my mind, because as the market has developed on this series between the Portland Trail Blazers and the Denver Nuggets, the more I have looked personally into this series, the more fascinated I become by what Portland and Denver could potentially be. And from a series price perspective, right, it is the most intriguing. A lot of spots, if you're looking around the country at some of the markets, pretty wide variety of prices, but opened up a pick essentially at minus 110. As of this point right now, Portland $1.30 or higher over at William Hill, Circa, and Westgate Superbook or Superbook Sports. BetMGM's got Portland at his $1.20 favorite. Got a couple of picks out there like a DraftKings. FanDuel's got minus 115 on Portland. And then PointsBet, which does have a base out in Denver, which we'll talk to about with Chad Andrus out in Denver coming up in a couple of minutes, has Denver at minus 120, the lone spot in which Denver is the favorite in this series. So I bet Denver plus 112 over at Circa to win this series. It's the second series bet I've made up to this point, so I've got Atlanta minus 120, and I've got Denver at about plus, I've got Denver at plus 112. And I bet that early this morning is, again, it's May 20th on a Thursday. I'm going to have more details on this for the pod tomorrow, on Friday, and you're going to hear some of the analysis when we talk with Chad coming up in a couple of minutes. But there are some really inherent flaws with the Portland Trailblazers. And I get the injury situation for the Denver Nuggets, but I do think that the advantages they have in the front court will potentially outweigh the advantages that the Portland Trailblazers have in the backcourt and the flaws that that team has from a defensive standpoint. Plus 112 is a good price, I think, to buy in on. So, took plus 112 for Denver in the series price. That one is available over at Circa out here in Las Vegas. Don't know how it varies, right, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I know Circa's out there in Colorado, too, so don't know if they're shaded a little bit differently. But let's get into this. Chad Andrus is with us out in Denver, does a lot of media out there in Mile High. Chad, I appreciate the time, man. So let's start with this. I was looking around. I guess it was kind of surprising. Denver minus 120 over at PointsBet. Did you see this? Did you notice this?
Yeah. And PointsBet's a Denver company, enough, but a slight favorite. And I look at this kind of as, like you said, a pick 'em series, but almost like a toss up NFL or a football game, right? With the home field advantage given the 3 points, right? So if Denver is the slight favorite, I would say just because of home court.
So when we're looking at this, there's a lot of like layers to this, right? But let's start with health, because health is the big key here. I think it's a reason why you see Portland as high as $1.32 favorite in some markets. So I was reading over a couple of things. Mike Singer over at the Denver Post, and one of the pieces up there to read an excerpt from it. Quote, if I'm Portland, I see a team hobbling into the postseason without Jamal Murray and without Will Barton and P.J. Dozier, at least to start. So what's the health status of Barton and Dozier? Reading that, it sounds like they're not going to be available. That's obviously not an official report. It seems more like, you know, hearsay type of stuff. But what do you think the read is here on Dozier and Barton to start this series?
My best guess is not any better than anyone else's, to be honest with you. I think Dozier is probably closer and more likely to play. Will Barton is the key, though, right? I mean, you're looking at a totally different team when they have another scoring option in the backcourt, as much as they've been banged up. And obviously, Jamal Murray is the elephant in the room, right? So, you know, if Will Barton plays, it makes sense that Denver, I would think, would be just that slight favorite with the home court. If Will Barton doesn't play, then I think you totally flip this, right? You know, with all the talk about the way the end of the regular season played out and what teams may or may not have done to try to orchestrate their matchups, right? I think on paper, when you look at it with a banged up backcourt, going to face Dame and CJ is not exactly ideal if you're Denver, right? You would have liked anybody else, right? So, you know, Will Barton is the key, right? And sadly enough for him, he was devastated last year when he couldn't play in the bubble. And it really, really affected him. You know, he was really hurt that he could not be there, you know, psychologically, right, emotionally, to not be with his teammates as well as the physical ailment. But to have that happen again so late in the season, right, I think it's really, really rough on him. Obviously, he's going to do everything he can to try and play this time around.
So what we've seen from Denver down the stretch here is these injuries have taken place. One of the regularities in the backcourt has been a Facundo Campazzo-Austin Rivers pairing. What have you made of this? The numbers aren't exactly friendly. They're not terrible, but outscored by 2 points every 100 possessions with those two on the floor together. Defensive rating of 117.4. What have your observations been with those two when they play together?
You know, Facu Campazzo, not your ordinary rookie, right? 29 years old, plenty of international experience. It was apparent instantly as soon as he got into the rotation this year that he was the guy that the Nuggets needed to legitimately arrive as a contender, because it is the one guy that, you know, every playoff opponent will absolutely hate and despise and scream about every game, every time he's in the game, no matter how many minutes he plays, right? He is just that annoying, irritant little gnat, right, that causes problems but makes plays. And the thing with him is when he's making shots, right, it's really valuable. And he's one of those X-factor guys that can swing a game with drawing a charge here or there or a steal or whatever the case may be. But he's got to knock down shots. Austin Rivers is not a big enough sample size, right? I mean, we know from a career standpoint, but there's just not a big enough sample size from when he was picked up after the Jamal Murray injury. Obviously, you know, Denver is going to need Dozier and Barton to come back and be healthy and to play more of those minutes than I think they want Austin Rivers on the court.
Yeah. And what's the deal with Morris, right? Morris comes back near the end of the year. I think last game we saw him was 18 minutes. He's been obviously banged up, one of these guys too. Do you expect him fully healthy by the time we get to game one?
I don't know about fully healthy, but he's going to be out there, right? So, you know, that's the other key when you lose a point guard in Jamal Murray. Monte Morris is he wouldn't be a top tier starting point guard in this league, but he's good enough to be a starting point guard, right? So he's going to have to play like that, right? So whether he's healthy or not, the fact that he doesn't turn the ball over is huge, right? But he's going to have to knock down shots. This is the thing, right? When you miss the scoring element of Jamal Murray, it doesn't matter if you're talking about Will Barton coming in and be able to make plays off the dribble. If you're talking about Monte Morris getting spot up jumpers, spot up threes from Jokic feeds or Campazzo or whoever you're talking about, the guys that are in are going to have to make shots. And if you rewind to 2 years ago when these two teams met with the Western Conference Finals on the line, that was the problem. And it wasn't just a problem for Denver. It was a problem for both teams by the time they got to game seven, right? CJ McCollum was the only guy making any shots. And that's why the Blazers won that game seven and went to the Western Conference Finals. Obviously, the Nuggets built on that. They learned from that. Jamal Murray was that clutch playmaker, shot maker down the stretch last year. So I think the biggest question you have with Denver is, as good as they are, as great as Jokic has been, and how much he can elevate his teammates, Are they going to have the guys knock down the shots when they matter down the stretch, the last 3 minutes of a playoff game, the way Jamal Murray embraced that last year? Because as awesome as his bubble playoff performance was, it was his closing ability. He did not shy away from the moment. He took and he made the big shots down the stretch. So are they going to have that guy is the big question.
By the way, I'm glad you brought up that pass series between these two teams. It's actually one of my more favorite moments ever. Was it like a quadruple overtime game that they played in that series? You know, whatever it was, there was a great moment in which Jokic gassed out of his mind and he loses his shoe and he's just waving guys off because he's like, I can't right now. He's like, I'm trying to get my shoe back on. I'm gassed. I'm winded. I can't do anything. But Jokic has changed his body. He looks much different now, but it's still a very lasting image in my mind of that playoff series. All right, so let's go to this. As we look around and as we look at matchups, right? And this is why I think this, Chad, is so fascinating, because given the health status of Denver, I obviously would not slight anybody. Give me the backcourt of Portland all day. I'll take the front court of Denver all day, though. And like, this is where the trade-off is here and why I think it's very interesting that there is, I shouldn't say a rush, but there is an assumption and a need here and a want to go, hey, you know, Portland, massive advantage. Let's make them the series favorite. I want to bet on Portland in this matchup. Well, it's like, well, wait a minute. Hold on. First off, if you watch Portland play offense, it is very perimeter-oriented. It is dependent on your perimeter shots going down. It is not CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard attacking guys off of the bounce and finishing within 4 feet. They're actually one of the worst teams to do that. And so I have a team in Denver in my mind that can finish within the basket against a very soft interior team, the better front court, and another team in Portland that is relying on their three-point shooting. Like, I think there are still a lot of things to like here about Denver, even with the health situation in the backcourt.
Yeah, and I would add that I think it's a it's an ideal national showcase for Jokic, for all of the people who have looked for excuses to promote anybody else for MVP all year, right? If he elevates this team against Dame, against CJ undermanned, and they see all the things he does and all the open looks he creates for his teammates, right? I think more people around the country who were just trying anything they could to reach for Embiid or reach for Curry or reach for Chris Paul to make a case. By the way, when they did that, none of them ever made a case as to why they should win over Jokic. They just promoted that player, right? But I think it's a great showcase for Jokic to do that. The thing I would say about the Portland backcourt, and it goes back to what we just referenced with 2 years ago, Dame, we all know, is amazing and can go nuclear on anybody at any moment. But for the most part, Denver has not allowed him to do that, right? He hasn't had the 45, the 50-point games against the Nuggets. CJ has hurt them just as much as Dame has, right? Dame's been consistent, but, you know, that's what great players are, right? They don't have two bad games in a row, as Charles Barkley will tell you. So the one thing I think going to Denver's advantage here, when you mentioned Portland's just lack of any kind of interior presence, is obviously Jokic's ability to kind of do whatever he wants there. But the other thing that the addition of Aaron Gordon has allowed Denver to do is, while everyone wants to kind of red flag Jokic's defense and say Denver's not great defensively, they're not terrible. And the one thing they do is they can vary their coverages, right? They can play different types and they can give different looks. They're a little bit more flexible, especially with Aaron Gordon now. And I think that's a big difference maker when you get to a playoff series, when you can give different looks against different lineups, different combinations, and different looks down the stretch of games based on situations, that I'm not sure Portland can do that. Like 2 years ago, in that series, you know, Portland had Aminu, right? And allowed them a little bit more of that flexibility when they had a long, lanky guy that could do a few more things. And I'm not sure that they have that type of defensive adaptability that Denver has. Even if they're not elite at it, they're still flexible enough to do a few different things. And that might be one of the places where you look to get an advantage.
Yeah, and I would argue too, Chad, like, you know, to use that term too, I think Portland is bad defensively, right? Like, there's a lot to indicate that Portland isn't just not good defensively in any stretch, whether it's given up a lot within 4 feet. They're in the 20s in terms of three point percentage of opponents, according to Cleaning the Glass. And you have, you know, Gordon, he has been really dynamic. And what I've been really surprised by is when Jokic and Gordon are on the floor together, offensive rating for Denver is 120.9. Like, what he has provided them offensively has surprised me. I just didn't know. I guess next to Jokic, who makes everybody better, as you've alluded to, I didn't realize that Gordon could be this sort of an ancillary piece offensively that really ratchets up the floor of your offense and how good they could be.
Well, the funny thing about it is, and I know most of the country, right? I know a lot of people listening to this has seen Denver highlights, and I've seen Denver in bits and pieces, right? I realize there's not people around the country that watch the Nuggets wire to wire. In fact, hell, most of the people in Denver can't watch them because of the regional sports network situation, right? But the interesting thing about that offensive rating is Gordon does not look to shoot or score.
Yep.
Everything comes organically just by moving. Right. He figured out in the first week here, right, all you have to do is pick and roll. All you got to do is cut, and you're just going to get dunks. Right. Jokic is going to find you, and you're going to get dunks. He is not have any of that weight, any of that pressure that he had in Orlando to try and create offensively and force something. And he understands that. And to his credit, he's played into what the Nuggets do, where, okay, my role here is to be a lockdown defender. It provides some versatility and athleticism on that side of the court. And anything offensively is just going to come if I move. I don't have to worry about being a focus. I don't have to worry about, you know, playing with a second unit where I have to score. He plays off of Jokic. He rolls to the rim and he dunks. And that's literally all he does. So, I mean, that's the product of the offensive rating when people let Jokic cook, because they all benefit. And it's the same thing you've seen from Michael Porter stepping up when Murray went out, right? Operate through Jokic. If everybody understands that and just moves, they're going to get open looks. All they got to do is knock them down.
So as we sit right now, it is Thursday, May 20th. Your read on – actually, before I get your question to this, I want to go back one more thing. We've seen three games between these two teams. And it was funny. I was going back, looking over box scores and reading game notes and getting ready for this, and I realized one thing, and I wrote this down. I think it's impossible to take anything from these three regular season matchups, right? Like, you know, we watched the Lakers last night and the Warriors, and in the second half, that was what happened in the two wins for the Lakers in the regular season. You play relatively well against Curry and the other pieces on defense, and then LeBron James, Anthony Davis with their size, and of course AD at the five can really beat you up, and it's exactly what they did. But you look at the three games that these two teams have played, they didn't have Aaron Gordon for one. You had the regular season finale, which we know was going on there with, you know, the Nuggets having nothing to play for, essentially, and benching guys near the end. And I know they played a good chunk of the first quarter, and I think first half, if I remember correctly. There's one game, and it was a one-point victory for Denver, which was like, hey, everybody's on the floor that you're going to see on the floor here. I don't know how much you can take out of these regular season matchups. Or is there something in that one win for Denver that you think sticks out to you?
No, I don't think you can take a whole lot, right? The core of what you're looking at outside of Zach Collins being hurt again, yep. Right? I mean, you're looking at Dame and CJ and Melo, right? And you're looking at, I guess, the addition of Cantor this year, right? You know, but the core of what you're looking at is not all that much different than what it was over the last two or three years, with the exception of Jamal Murray being out, right? You're looking at Jokic and how he facilitates. Right, you're looking at, obviously, Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr.'s emergence are a little bit different than the pieces Denver has had over the last few years, right? It's not like they've got, you know, Plumlee in there behind Jokic or anything like that anymore. So there are a few pieces that are slightly different, but overall, what the two teams do, the familiarity with each other over 3 years is your better sample size, because at the end of the day, you're still looking at Dame and CJ against Jokic, right? And that's the way you're going to break down the series. I think Denver's done a little bit better job of adjusting and tweaking the pieces and developing the pieces around Jokic than necessarily Portland has done for Dame and CJ. But, you know, this year, I don't think there's a lot to gain from any of those, other than the fact that in the playoffs, and this was established really the last 2 years, and in the bubble in particular, the numbers on Jokic rebounds have always been alarmingly low, in my opinion. Betting over on Jokic rebounds, especially against a team that can't defend, right, where he's going to get offensive rebounds, They have no presence inside. I've already taken him for game one over 11.5 because in every big game that was important last year in the, you know, coming back from 2-3-1 deficits, in every big game, Jokic was getting 17, 18, 20 rebounds, right? So that might be one thing to look at starting in game one and as a theme through the series. But I think that and then the Michael Porter Jr. threes has pretty consistently been set at 3.5 for an over-under, right? Depending on how that goes in game one, you can adjust accordingly, but those are probably the two plays that I would see consistently that might relate to the regular season series, but anything else, I don't really know if there's any correlation.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, I'm most excited going through a bunch of these lineup numbers and everything like that, being the stat nerd that I am. The Gordon Jokic Porter minutes are going to be so much fun for this team offensively. Like going against the Portland defense, like that's a lineup that's going to have a bunch of success, especially with the way the Porter's just emerged over these last, 20 games or so?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, long-term for people in Denver looking at this, right, I think people are optimistic they could beat Portland, but nobody really expects more than winning one series, if that, with Murray out,
yeah.
Right? But the thing that they're watching is, one, Jokic in his continual growth, especially if he's announced as MVP, right, while they're still in the playoffs. And two, Michael Porter Jr., right? Because this is an opportunity, and so far so good, for him to step up and really shine and, you know, make himself a significant force in this league, a player you have to account for with Jamal Murray out. And I think it's a very, very good matchup for him to get started with to build some playoff confidence, right? If they were to play the Lakers, or if they were to play, an elite defensive team in the first round, and he just was going from this, 23 points a game over the last 2 months of the season, and to be held in check, right? And, barely be sniffing double digits, or, going, 1-for-8 from three every game. I think it might, curb his development. It might harm him, but he's got a very favorable matchup to build playoff confidence and establish himself as a legit force of forming a big three when Jamal Murray does return, at the end or beyond from next season.
All right, before we move on and get your thoughts on some other big picture topics, what's your eventual pick here? Do you know who you're going to take to win this series?
I'm going to ride Jokic.
Yeah.
He's the best player in the series. I think the home court will matter. They're eventually going to, continue to let a few more fans filter into Ball Arena. It's about 8,000 right now for the Nuggets and the Avalanche, but I think maybe by the end of the series that may increase. But he has given no indication all year long that he will be anything other than absolutely stellar. And when you put him against a team that struggles defensively, I think he's going to do enough to elevate his teammates and win the series.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Interact with the show on Twitter at me, JVT, at Roach_97, and at VSIN Live.
Yeah, I would agree. I bet him at Circa at +112. It's the best price that was out there for the series, and I don't think I could have turned that one down. I do think Portland's got a lot of flaws defensively, so I would be in agreement on that. All right, let's get some big picture stuff for Chad Anderson again joining us out of Denver. First off, I know you were a massive fan of LeBron's performance last night against the Warriors.
I'm on the same page as CJ McCollum with that. Here's the thing with the Lakers. And Laker fans, look, just stop right now. I don't want to get the hate. I don't want you to tweet at me. I don't want you to DM me. I've got a ticket on the Lakers as a future, right? I still think they will go to the finals and likely win. So I don't want to hear from Laker fans about the hate. But to me, as much as I've loved LeBron and enjoyed his career and appreciated him as probably the most talented player I've ever seen, the LeBron Lakers are the equivalent of the last three seasons of Game of Thrones. And I'm going to tell you why, right? So, right, it's in the GOAT conversation for like the best ever, right? And you're fully invested, right? You've been watching the career, everything he's done, the championships, the struggles, moving around from Miami to Cleveland to, out to the Lakers. So you're invested in it, right? You followed the whole thing. You want to see how it ends up. You know, he's still playing at a high level. You're invested. You're going to ride it out. But at this point, and it has been since he's gotten to LA, the Lakers, from a basketball fan standpoint, and I'm not talking about as a bettor, right? As a bettor, right? Trust your numbers and, you know, make your money. But as a basketball fan standpoint, the Lakers are unwatchable. They are absolutely unwatchable as a team. It starts with LeBron and his kind of premeditated built-in excuses, right? That he always kind of floats out there just in case it goes wrong, right? Well, you know, Steph should be the MVP, right? You know, he clearly played at this level. Just in case, whisper, whisper, we lose this game, we lost to the guy that should have been the MVP, right? Last night, roll and ride on the floor in pain for 5 minutes when you get poked in the eye trying to get the flagrant call, right, and the benefit at the end of the game, and then say, oh, well, I was seeing three rims, right? Funny how in that same quote he said, I saw the shot clock, and then I looked down and I saw three rims. So he saw one shot clock, okay, but suddenly there were three rims when he looked a little lower, right? There's always this premeditated, well, if I fail, this is why it happened, just in case, right? But the other thing that is a bigger thing for me as a basketball fan, it starts with Anthony Davis. LeBron has adopted it. You saw it with Wes Matthews late in the game on the high screen last night. This entire team is a bunch of fish out of water flopping on the floor the entire game. And it is unwatchable. Anthony Davis, as great and as talented as he is an unwatchable player. How many times has he hit the floor in a game? Yeah. Get up and play. Right, last night, Draymond tried to set that little pick, and Anthony Davis went diving out of bounds because he barely made contact with his calf. Foul on Draymond. Wave off a three. Right? He does it all the time on closeouts to where somehow a guy who's 7 foot closing out on guard shooting threes, somehow the guy shooting the ball is getting called for a foul.
Chad, Facundo Campazzo took him out a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. Right? 5'8", Facundo Campazzo, and Anthony Davis goes down like he was snipered. Right? Like, he is unwatchable as much as he is on the floor. Get off the floor and play, right? If they would just play and quit with the, and it's so ironic, right? Because it's Hollywood. It is Hollywood for the Lakers. Everything is a production. Everything is over-dramatized. Everything is, oh, I saw three rims, right? This quote is going to be famous and people are going to, you know, remember it forever. The miracle shot from LeBron. It was an amazing play from an amazing player, but come on with it, man. The drama, like, get up and just play. They are unwatchable. I cannot stand it.
I do not feel as strongly as I agree with all of your sentiments. I just don't feel as strongly about it. Like watching Lakers games it's kind of like nails on a chalkboard. It's not very beautiful to the eye. But I will say this: the one thing that I think elicits a similar response from me when I watch them play, and the second half was the perfect example of this. Why in the world, Chad, does Frank Vogel and Anthony Davis? Or do they not? It's more grammatically correct. Why do they not realize how good this team is with Anthony Davis at the five? Like, that just, it drives me nuts that they refuse to do it. And it sounds like it's some personal, like, AD doesn't want to play the position. The second they go to him at the five, they open things up and they start obliterating Golden State. You know, I tweeted out the numbers this morning. Like, if you look at what happened to the first half compared to the second half with their offense rating, first half offensive rating, 85.7, second half, 122, a net rating of plus 32 over 100 possessions if they had played that way. That's what drives me nuts, is when you clearly have something that works for your team, but because AD, I guess, doesn't want to do it, you just don't do it, and then you're sitting on a 13-point deficit at halftime. You need to come all the way back. That's what drives me nuts about watching this team.
That was a perfect tweet last night that said, things Anthony Davis is good at, playing the five, playing pick and roll. Things Anthony Davis refuses to do: play the five, play pick and roll, right? And yeah, I agree with you 100%, right? You know, super talented, and it's a pet peeve, right? It's in some measure, not exactly the same way, but you can make the comparison. It's in some measure why Russell Westbrook drives so many people so crazy. Know your game. Yep. Know who you are as a player and understand how it fits in with the team concept to win, right? You can't just do what you want to do all the time. you have to understand what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. And yeah, it's mind-boggling, right? But AD is as talented as he is, as amazing as he is, I just roll my eyes every time I watch.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast, only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
So any of these other series prices that are set as of today, Thursday, any other ones that have stuck out to you at all?
You know, I think the interest in betting the Knicks is a little hard for me to understand. And what started as, you know, essentially a pick'em series, I would certainly lean Atlanta that way. In terms of, you know, any of the other series, I think, I know you said Denver-Portland is probably the highlight for you, the best one to watch. Miami-Milwaukee has really caught my eye, and I think this is the opportunity for the Bucks to really get over the hump, and I think they're going to do it in rather impressive fashion. And that would be the one that I would lean on the Bucks to not only win game one, but win the series. It's what I've seen a lot of people talking about with these high series prices is just bet that team to win game one and the series and get a better price instead of laying the big number for the series, which is evident in hockey too right now. So that would be the other series that I'm interested in and probably looking to have my eye on would be the Miami-Milwaukee series. I think the Clippers make pretty short work of the Mavericks. I don't think Dallas is very good. You know, and we'll see what happens with the Lakers and the Suns, right? Poor Chris Paul is... You know, he's Ernie Banks over here, right? He finally gets the number two seed, and then, oh, here comes LeBron, right? So it'll be interesting to see how game one in that series goes and how the adjustments go after game one.
Yep. Again, Chad Andrews out in Denver. Chad, I appreciate a couple minutes today. Thank you very much for coming on. We'll get you again as the postseason develops, okay?
Anytime, my man. Appreciate it.